Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Yadyapi jagrat swapna susuptam cha gunato buddhi vrittayaha tasam vilakshano jiva sakshitvena vinishchita. I'm sorry, I still have some leftover questions. I didn't look at them, so I'm not ready to answer them. I know they're 2 days old, excuse me. But, okay, anyway. Yadyapi, that verse, iti darshanena shuddha jiva swarupam ev atro pastitam bhavati tatap yatra natan matram vivakshitam kint vantar bhuta jivakyadi shaktikam purna chidrupam eva vivakshitam. There is a statement that, and that statement is from the 11th canto, 13th chapter of the Bhagavatam. The statement says, waking, sleeping, and deep sleep are the three functions of the intelligence and are caused by the modes of material nature. The living entity within the body is ascertained to possess characteristics different from these three states and thus remains as a witness to them. Even though this verse's viewpoint focuses on the identity of the pure jiva, nonetheless, in the context, we are now discussing not only the jiva, not only the jiva, but also the complete form of spirit, which includes within itself the energy called jiva. That's the Paramatma, Supersoul. When a complete object cannot be exhibited, then it has to be indicated by some part of itself. As when one shows, here is the ocean at the tip of one's finger. The finger is only pointing to a small part of the ocean. Since conceiving the Supreme as Brahman is due from the viewpoint of non-distinction, it is appropriate to describe Brahman as having no differentiation. We should discriminate similarly when absence of differentiation is proposed in other contexts. In other words, it's not that there is no variety in the Supreme, but when we're looking at that aspect of the Supreme abstracted from all its varieties, then we can say it's non-differentiated. And that's a general rule, that descriptions of the Supreme as having no variety is just description of the partial aspect, the impersonal realization. Continuing. Yes. Well, okay. Yatra purnam vastu darshayatum na shakyate tatraika desha nir deshen aiv o dishyate anguliagre sumudrayam itivat brahmatva grahanam chabeda drishtyaiva syad iti tadabeda nirdeshas tratropa yukta eva evam anyatrapya abheda nirdesho vivechaniyaha. Then continuing, yadi bedo gapaniyas tada swapnadao yad anvayena stitam yachatad bahi shudhayam jivakya shaktao tatastitam chakarat tatak paratrapi vyatirekena stitam swayam avashishtam iti vyakyayam. When a But if we want to show these words as describing actual difference, then, the same words, that he's inside and outside of everything, he's all-pervading. We can, when we want to read from these words a description of actual difference, then we should interpret them as saying that the Supreme is what is positively present in wakefulness and the other states of consciousness, and is also present outside these, within his own energy known as the jiva. The word, chakara tatak, I read that, The word and further implies that he is also present as separate in yet another location, in yet other locations, situated by himself. He's in the material situations, the situations of the three states of material consciousness. Then there's the pure jiva, who's actually in a fourth position, transcendental. The supreme paramatma is situated within the jiva, and he also has his own place beyond all this, his own abodes. So this can be a description not just of Brahman. If we want to read personality into it, we can. It's not denying personality. Tadaivam yat trividatvain avir bhavati tatparam eva tatvam avehiti. Param avehi are words from the verse. Shri Naradaha. Thus, quote, you should understand that which appears in these three different ways, as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, to be the supreme truth. The verse under discussion was spoken by Sri Narada. It's actually Narada talking to Yudhishthira, I think, in the 11th canto. Commentary, this verse was related by Krishna to Uddhava. Wait a minute. Which verse is which here? I see. We have in 4.4, we have a new verse. It's not the main verse was spoken in 4.1. That's the main topic of the Anuchet, which was Stityud bhava pralaya hetu ad hetu rasya yat swapna. That was a description of the absolute truth in three phases. And in 4.4 we have another verse that's just a side comment. And that was spoken by Uddhava? By Kumaras to Uddhava. Okay. It's also 11th canto, 13th chapter. But I think just saying this verse, it's this verse. It's the closest verse. This verse was related by Krishna to Uddhava. This verse beginning, Jagrat Swapna, how's that? I want to identify it so we don't confuse which verse we're talking about. Jagrat Swapnaha. This verse beginning, Jagrat Swapnaha, was related by Krishna to Uddhava, as having been spoken by the four Kumara brothers, by Krishna's swan incarnation, Hamsadeva. Lord Hamsa spoke it to the four Kumaras, and then Krishna's telling about that to Uddhava. With this and other instructions, Lord Hamsa trained the Kumaras as perfect knowers of the absolute truth. Even today, the Nimbarka Sampradaya temples, they have on their altars. They usually have a special altar with Sanat Kumara and is Hamsa Gopal? Or other Hamsa is there, but I think in form of Krishna. Hamsa Gopal. Anyway, Hamsa is there as you know, on their altar as the founder of their Sampradaya, the Embarka Sampradaya. Okay. In both this verse and in the verse spoken by Pipalayana Rishi, which is the subject of this Anuchet, that first verse, the Supreme is described in its impersonal, localized, and complete aspects. Impersonal Brahman should be understood in both these contexts, and wherever else it is introduced, as not literally devoid of distinctions, but as a limited view belonging to conditioned souls that ignores the distinctions. The distinctions are there, but it's a view that leaves out the distinctions. The same words of these two verses can be understood either impersonally or personally. From the personal viewpoint, the Supreme Brahman is present as the underlying basis of all bodily consciousness, as the witnessing companion of the jivas, and also in the transcendental realm, where separately from all material existence, he and his devotees actively pursue what delights them. Oh boy. That is Anuchet 4. I think that's clear enough. Let me just move on. The second verse, it seems to be talking about the jiva, but Jiva Goswami points out that it's really the Supreme Lord is present as super soul, and the jiva is one of his energies. I'm sorry, did you want to provide something? Repeat the translation of 4.4? Okay, it's a little long, but I'll read it. There is a statement that waking, sleeping, and deep sleep are the three functions of the intelligence and are caused by the modes of material nature. The living entity within the body is ascertained to possess... I'm sorry. Could you go to my room? In a cup, there's two bottles of black medicine. The one with almost nothing, put three big spoons. And the one with more, put two big spoons. And then fill it with water. There's two bottles of black medicine. The one has less, put three spoons and add water and bring it. Thank you. Did I read the last sentence? The living entity within the body is ascertained to possess characteristics different from these three states, and thus remains as a witness to them. Even though this verse's viewpoint focuses on the identity of the pure jiva, nonetheless, in this context, we are now discussing not only the jiva, but also the complete form of spirit, which includes within itself the energy called jiva. When a complete object cannot be exhibited, then it has to be indicated by some part of itself. As when one shows, here is the ocean at the tip of one's finger. Since conceiving the Supreme as Brahman is done from the viewpoint of non-distinction, it is appropriate to describe Brahman as having no differentiation. We should discriminate similarly when absence of differentiation is proposed in other contexts. But if we want to show these words as describing actual difference, then we should interpret them as saying that the Supreme is what is positively present in wakefulness and the other states of consciousness, and is also present outside of these within his own energy known as the jiva. The word "and" further implies that he is also present as separate in yet another in other locations, situated by himself. Thus, quote, you should understand that which appears in these three different ways. What three different ways? Yeah. Understand that to be the supreme truth. The verse under discussion was spoken by Sri Narada. That's the verse at the beginning of the Anuchet. Okay. I think we move into five. Idameva trayam siddhi prasange pyaha tribihi. These three features are also described in the course of discussing siddhis, mystic perfections, in the following three verses. I presume that's, Krishna's discussion of mystic yoga and the mystic siddhis that he tells Uddhava in the 15th chapter of the 11th canto. Vishnau tvyadishvare chittam dharayet kala vigrahe sa ishitvam ishitvam avapnoti kshetram kshetragyachodanam narayane turiyakye bhagavat chabda chobdite chabda shabdite mano maya dadad yogi madharma vashitamiyat Nirgune brahmani mayi darayan vishadam manaha paramanandam apnoti yatra kamo vasiyate. Okay. Adadad is a present participle, but the subject is yogi, is masculine. Why does it have this ut ending? I think because it's third gana. It has an apparently neuter ending, adadat. Adadad yogi, but why not adadun? After Narayan, where's Narayan? Is there anybody after Narayan? Yeah, Narayan is what? Narayan is. What does Narayan mean? I forgot. Oh, Narayan and Narayan. Yeah. Okay, there is reduplication here. So Narayan is the dud part. This is not strong? No? Okay. Does that mean, so that happens in this reduplicated class. What is that class called? Huadi. Does it also happen is there any other case where it will happen beside that? Where? There's some adadi verbs that are reduplicated. But it doesn't happen in derived verbs? Frequentative or something? Okay. Frequentative would have. Young. Yun. Desertive, okay. Something happens in desertive because you get a regular masculine ending. Jakir shun. Anyway, that's a digression into grammar. Let's read the translation of these three verses. These three features are also described in the course of discussing mystic perfections in the following three verses. One who places his consciousness on Vishnu the Supersoul, the prime mover and supreme lord of the external energy consisting of the three modes, obtains the mystic perfection of controlling other conditioned souls, their material bodies, and their bodily designations. The yogi who places his mind in my form of Narayana, known as the fourth factor, full of all opulences, becomes endowed with my nature and thus obtains the mystic perfection called Vashita, or freedom from the control of material nature. One who fixes his pure mind on me, in my manifestation as the impersonal Brahman, obtains the greatest happiness, wherein all his desires are completely fulfilled. So we have the mystic perfection achieved by meditating on Vishnu. That would be Paramatma. He says Vishnu, the Supersoul, Paramatma. And then Narayan, full of opulences, that's Bhagawan. You get Vashita, city. And you get Kamavaseta if you meditate on impersonal Brahman. And then I have to fix the punctuation here. This should be in italics. Bing, bing. Okay. 5.2 gives Sridhar Swami's commentary on that. Tika cha triadishvare triguna maya niyantari ata eva kala vigrahe. Kala vigrahe is also in the verse. Not there. Oh, yeah, the first verse. Kala vigrahe. Meaning akala yitri rupe antaryamini. Turiyakye. Virat Hiranyagarbhascha. This is a quote. Virat Hiranyagarbhascha karanamit yupadaya ishasya yatribirhinam tatturiyam tatpadam viduhu. Anybody know where that comes from? Could someone check and see whether that's in the Bhagavatam? Virat Hiranyagarbhascha. Iti evam lakshane aishvarasya samagrasya viryasya yashashakshriyaha jnana vaivagyayos chapi shanam bhaga itingana. Where is that from? Vishnu Purana 6.5. Tadvati bhagavat shabdite ityesha. Sri Bhagavan. Ityesha. That's it. That's a formula for marking the end of Sridhar Swami's commentary, whenever he quotes it. Okay, you quote a long passage of Sridhar Swami's commentary, he'll tell you that in the beginning, but how do you know how far the commentary goes and when it switches back to Jiva Goswami talking? So Jiva Goswami has this formula, iti esha, to mark the end of the commentary, of Sridhar Swami's commentary. Sri Bhagavan. That means Sridhar Swami comments on these verses. He says, on the supreme controller of the three, that means meditate on the supreme controller of the three, means on the regulator of Maya with her three modes. Thus, quote, on the personal form of Kala, which is to say, on the indwelling Supersoul, who acts as the controller. Okay, that's Supersoul. Quote, on him who is called the fourth means on him who is thus defined. And a definition of Bhagavan. The gross, mental, and causal forms of the total universe are imaginary forms of the Supreme Lord. That form of his which is free from these three features is known as the fourth. And then that's Brahman. That's definition of Brahman, which is beyond everything material. But nothing specific about him is said. That's Brahman. On him who is called the fourth is a reference to Brahman. And on him who is termed Bhagawan means on him who has the qualities described in the statement, Bhaga indicates the six assets of all controlling power, all physical strength, all fame, all opulence, all knowledge, and all renunciation. The verse under discussion was spoken by the personality of Godhead. So that should mark, you know, when you get a tag like that saying who said the verse, that marks the end of an anuchid normally. Yes. You found that verse. Virahiranyagarbhastra, where did you find it?
It's Adi 253.
But what does Adi 253 say? Does it give a reference?
It's commenting his interpretation for Shikara Swami on 11:15.
Oh, but that's what we're reading right here. Shikara Swami's commentary. We just went around in a circle. We're reading Shikara Swami's commentary. The verse is there, and I need to know where it comes from. It comes from Adi Lila, which says it comes from Shikara Swami's commentary. So, yes. Yeah. This is Shikara Swami's commentary on that verse that we read in 5.1, which is that verse. But he's quoting something. He's not quoting Shikara Swami. Is not quoting Chaitanya Charitamrita. Okay. One second, please. Commentary. In each created universe, the second form of the Purusha, Gobodakshai Vishnu, exhibits the pastime of taking rest on the body of water covering the bottom half of the universal egg. When during his sleep, a lotus stem grows out of his navel, Brahma, the delegated creator who is the first manifest jiva in the universe, takes birth from the garbho dakshayi purusha, first accepting the lotus stem as itself as his body, and then born a second time on the flower that appears from the stem. Two different bodies, because in the first body, Brahma is the soul of the Virat. Virat is a material body. The universal form is a material body. There is a jiva, namely Brahma, who possesses that body and identifies with it. And what about it being the body of God? Well, God's there as the supersoul, and that's Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, is the supersoul of the Virat, the universal body. Okay, that's Brahma's first body in the universe. The second body is on the lotus flower, second birth. Like every finite soul born into the material creation, Brahma accepts both gross and subtle bodies. The lotus stem is Brahma's external body, the Virat, or universal form, which only adept yogis are able to see. Or you can buy a poster of the universal form and put it on your wall and meditate on it and pretend you're a yogi. His even less perceptible mental body underlying the Virat is called Hiranyagarbha. So not many people can see that one. If only a few yogis can see the gross body of the universe, then the subtle body of the universe is even more rarely perceived. And therefore the Bhagavatam doesn't say much about it. It mentions it. But hardly anyone has ever seen anything of it. It's the subtle body of the whole universe. So not much can be said about it that we would understand. No, the Hiranyagarbha is the subtle body of the Virat. And that Hiranyagarbha is mentioned in the Bhagavatam a few places. But not much is said about it. And in his second birth, Brahma's four-headed body, visible to the demigods, is called Karana, the cause of manifest creation. That's his Karana body. For confirmation of this, see His Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada's purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 3.8.15. You want to look that up? Find Prabhupada's purport to 3.8.15?
And could you give, you have a microphone? Give Domino, you read it. You want to read it? Go ahead. You got it?
The lotus flower is the universal Virat form, or the gigantic form of the Lord in the material world. It becomes amalgamated in the personality of Godhead, Vishnu, in his abdomen at the time of dissolution, and it becomes manifest at the time of creation. This is due to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who enters into each of the universes. In this form is the sum total of all the fruitive activities of the living entities conditioned by material nature. And the first of them, namely Brahma, or the controller of the universe, is generated from the lotus flower. This firstborn living being, unlike all the others, has no material father, and thus he is called self-born, Svayambhu. He goes to sleep with Narayana at the time of devastation, and when there is another creation, he is born in this way. From this description, we have the conception of three: the gross Virat form, the subtle Hiranyagarbha, and the material creative force, Brahma.
So Hiranyagarbha, as the subtle body of the universal form, is confirmed by Srila Prabhupada in that purport. Continuing, last paragraph of the commentary. Persons without deep spiritual knowledge imagine that the Virat is Lord Vishnu's body, but actually the Supreme Lord never has a material body. It is in fact for the Jiva, Brahma, that the Hiranyagarbha and Virat bodies were produced, gross, subtle and gross bodies, and it is Brahma who assumes possession of them. Garbhodakshayi Vishnu is only involved as the Supersoul, accompanying him in his gross and subtle forms. Thus, the second Vishnu has three upadis, or imaginary identities, while his true identity remains always in a separate fourth category. Three upadis of the second Vishnu. I guess that's Hiranyagarbha, Virat, and then Chaturmukha Brahma. Yes? Yes. But it's not only used by Mayavadis. It's a Vedantic word. It's used by Vyasadeva. It's in the Upanishads. And so it's correctly, I really spent a lot of time trying to come up with a good translation of upadi, something simple, and I think imaginary identities is a decent translation. Okay, but let's make sure we have right. What are these three upadis of the second Vishnu? Yeah, okay, the Hiranyagarbha, the Virat, and Lord Brahma on the lotus flower. Some people may think these are bodies of God, but they're actually bodies of the Jiva, so they're not really Vishnu's identities. And Prabhupada does talk about the universal body as an imaginary form. Doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, but it means it's not really Vishnu's form. It's Brahma's body, and Vishnu's the super soul in it. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Okay? I mean, it's not that the universal body is imaginary. It means it doesn't exist, because everything that does exist comes from it. You know, it's the original of which everything in the material world are copies. It's the blueprints. So it's definitely real, but it's falsely imagined to be the Supreme Lord's body. Okay. Let's try Anuchet number 6. Vedanti tat tattva vidas. Did we discuss that verse yet? We discussed it in the end of the Tattva Sandar. We discussed the first half of it. Now we're second. Okay, so we dealt at the end of the Tattva Sandar. We dealt with the idea of Gyanam Advayam, the non-dual truth, in characterizing the tattva in general. And now Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdite is actually the general topic of the whole second sandarbha, or actually the second and third sandarbhas, describing all three features. Okay, so we were already dealing with that verse, Vedanti Tat Tattva Vedas. Atta Vedanti Itya Adi Asya Padyasya Pratyavastapanam Yavat Tritiya Sandarbham Udbhavyate. Okay, from here to the end of the third sandarbha, we intend to substantiate the statement beginning, learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth, call it such and such. That is, the statement that identifies the three features of the Supreme, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagawan. And explaining all of that, that one statement, will take this whole sandarbha and the third one, the Paramatma sandarbha. Up until the end of the Paramatma sandarbha, we're still dealing all with that basic topic. Continuing. Tatra yogyata vaishishtyena avirbhava vaishishtyam vaktum brahmavirbhave tavad yogyatam aha. First, we want to describe how these manifestations of the Supreme vary according to persons' different qualifications for realizing them. We've already discussed a little bit about that, I think, in the second Anuchet, about how the difference between these manifestations is, first of all, a difference of realization on the part of the limited souls. There is no ultimate difference between the three, but there are different views of the Supreme by different living entities. Okay, so that's what we're going to deal with now a little more elaborately, how different viewpoints or different qualifications for realization result in these three different concepts of the Supreme. And then there's a verse. Oh, the Bhavatam states the qualification for realizing specifically the manifestation of Brahman, the impersonal manifestation. And the verse is there. It is from the 10th canto, 14th chapter, which makes it prayers by Brahma to Krishna after the Vimohana Lila. Tatapi bhuman mahima gunasyate vibodhum arhat amalantar atmabihi avikriyat swanubhavad arupato Hyananya bodhyatma tayana chanyata. Nonetheless, is Brahma speaking to Krishna. Nonetheless, O unlimited one, one whose inner heart is spotless, can come to understand your greatness as the Supreme, devoid of material qualities. That's Brahman realization. One can do this by the kind of meditation on his own self, which transcends the ordinary activities of body and mind, which does not focus on any material object, and which involves recognition that the Supreme and oneself are non-different. Only in this way can one realize Brahman. So notice that Brahman realization is tied in with self-realization. Because, especially since we're going to, in this realization, we don't pay attention to the difference. We emphasize the sameness. So we want to understand the quality of the Supreme. Well, you can discover that quality of Satchitananda in yourself. So meditation on the jiva is the basis of meditation on Brahman, impersonal meditation. Okay, then continuing what Jiva Goswami has to say about this. Yadyapi brahmatve bhagavatve cha durgyayatvam uktam tatapi he bhuman swarupena gunena chananda te tava agunasya anavishkrita sarupa bhuta gunasya yo mahima mahatvam brihatvam brahmatvam iti yavat atakasmad uchyate brahma brimhati brimhayati cha iti shute satava mahima amalantaratmabik shudantak karanayar janayar vibodham arhasi arhasi or arhati tesham bodhe prakashitam arhati samarto bhavat yityartaha. The idea of this verse is that although it is said that the Supreme is difficult to understand in both his Brahman and Bhagavan features, I think not only is said, I think Brahma just said that. Or rather, Brahma has just said that. What is the previous verse? This is what verse? 10.14.6? What does 10.14.5 say?
And faithfully carrying out their prescribed duties, though such devotional service perfected by the processes of hearing and chanting about you, through such devotional service, they came to understand you, O infallible one, and could easily surrender to you and achieve your supreme abode.
Okay, that doesn't say that the Supreme is difficult to understand. It seems to say that there's many yogis who have understood him. So I guess that's not... Brahma didn't just immediately say that. It said somewhere else that the Supreme is difficult to understand. There's plenty of places where that's said. But not here, not in 10.14.5. Okay. Although the Supreme is difficult to understand in both his yes.
Maybe it's fourth verse. Just because she asked him Bhakti Mudasya to report this one, Krishanti, Kevala Podkala, that besides devotional service, all other processes are just a waste of time.
Maybe, but that's the point of that verse is that impersonal cultivation of knowledge doesn't yield a result. But if you follow devotional service, it shouldn't be too hard to understand Brahman and Bhagavan. I think here we're not referring to something Brahma said, but just to, in general it's said. And so my translation is right. Although it is said that the Supreme is difficult to understand in both his Brahman and Bhagavan features, still, now Brahma says, O Infinite One, you whose self and qualities are both unlimited. You know, when Brahma's calling Krishna unlimited, what's unlimited about him? And the gloss is that his self, his very identity, and his qualities are both unlimited. You have no qualities in the sense that the integral qualities of your inner self are not uncovered to ordinary eyes. Your greatness is the plenitude. I'm sorry about that word, plenitude. This means abundance, being a lot of something. Brihatvam, because Brahma comes from the verb brim, and brihat, or big, is also derived from the same verb. And brihatvam is bigness. I just use a fancy word, plenitude. I don't even say plenitude, I say plentitude. I don't know if there is such a word. I'm sorry, can I check my English dictionary? See, a plentitude exists? Fancy word that doesn't exist. It doesn't exist? Let me try Oxford Dictionary. Maybe the Brits use it. Plentitude. No such word. Oh boy. Here it is, plentitude. erroneous form of plenitude. But it goes back. No, but it goes all the way back to 1615. It's been used wrong. It's in Finnegan's Wake, James Joyce, A Plentitude of House Torts, 1939. I'm sorry, yes. Plentitude. Okay, but it's actually a wrong word. The condition, the plenitude means the condition of being absolutely full in quality, measure or degree, fullness, completeness, perfection. That's plenitude. Plentitude is a mistake. Well, I can take out the T and we won't be wrong. Plenitude. Okay. Your greatness is the plenitude, brihatvam, by which you are known as Brahman. Okay? Because he's brihat, he's called Brahman. As is stated in Shruti, why is the Supreme called Brahman? Because it expands, brimhati, and makes others expand, brimhayati, causative. Persons whose inner selves are spotless, whose hearts are pure, can understand that greatness of yours. In other words, your greatness should, is able to, reveal itself to their consciousness. Oh boy, okay. Commentary. In the first five anuchains, this is an orientation reminding us what we've been talking about. In the first five anuchains, the three aspects of the Supreme were distinguished. Now begins a discussion of who can realize each of the aspects and how. Okay, I have an extra word there. Let me delete it. Okay. After this discussion, in the rest of the Sandarbha, everything else required to fully explain what are Brahman and Bhagavan will be presented by citations from Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures and comments on them. So we'll also explain Brahman as we explain Bhagavan in the rest of the Sandarbha. The Paramatma Sandarbha will then explain the idea of the Supersoul. Okay, we're going to stop here, and we continue with 6.2 tomorrow. Excuse me for not answering. I've got pending questions from 2 days ago. I'll take care of them tonight. And please, if you have more questions, give them to me. Yes? Maybe it has. But it's not wrong if I say plenitude. I'll just knock the T out. Okay, I just did that. Probably half the readers won't know either word. I try to avoid fancy words, but once in a while it's effective. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Sri Jiva Goswami.